Hey.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm. As expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. The situation with Elon Musk and Twitter is not completely clear. We have a brand new report from Zero Hedge published today. Musk will resign as Twitter CEO after finding someone foolish enough to take the job. Elon Musk tweeted Tuesday night that he would step down from the CEO role at Twitter Incorporated after finding a successor. This comes 2 days after he asked users whether he should step down. Most respondents answered yes. But as I'm going to explain, that appears to be in a whacked-out poll where I think many bots were involved, and some of us suspect that it was actually a sting operation for them to reveal themselves. Here's the tweet. I will resign as CEO as soon as I find someone foolish enough to take the job. After that, I will just run the software and servers teams. They, it turns out, are critical areas at the social media company to control product decisions. Musk's tweet was in response to the Sunday night poll asking users whether he should step down as head of the company, which attracted 17.5 million votes, with 57.7 voting yes. My frank opinion, this is absurd. Should have been massively in favor of his remaining in place. After suggestions were made that bots might have skewed the survey, an actual poll with real people conducted by Harris, a voter research company, found the opposite result, with 61% of respondents voting yes for Musk to continue his crusade to liberate Twitter. Harris X tweets, and here's the full poll data release. 57% say Elon Musk should stay on as Twitter CEO, and statistically relevant poll of 1,028 general population respondents. Important note. Picture in our poll is even better for Elon Musk among those who say they use Twitter. 61% stay on. 39% stepped down. Again, this is a national representative and scientific poll. Updated data release will be up soon. Musk had previously based decision-making at Twitter on polls, and he appears he has kept his promise so far. On Sunday, Musk told 122 million Twitter followers that he had no successor in mind. No one who wants a job can actually keep Twitter alive, he tweeted. The news comes as Tesla investors complain that Musk's chaos over at Twitter is impacting Tesla's performance. Shares in the EV, electric vehicle company, have plunged more than 60% this year. On Tuesday alone, shares fell 8%. In pre-market trading, shares are up more than 2% on the news. In the future, Musk has also said voting on major policy decisions will only be done by paying Twitter Blue subscribers, which I think is perfectly appropriate. Meanwhile, however, the idea of freedom of speech seems to be unpopular with governments and with even academic institutions, no matter how prestigious. Get this. A shocking story from Ireland shows that normal people must stand up against compelled speech. Enoch Burke had been suspended from Wilson's Hospital School in County Westmeath, Ireland, after he refused to address a transitioning student as they rather than as he on the basis of his devout Christian beliefs. On Friday's episode of the Ezra Levant Show, guest host David Menendez discussed a shocking story out of Ireland regarding a teacher who has been imprisoned for refusing to use gender-neutral pronouns. Enoch Burke had been suspended from Wilson's Hospital School in County Westmeath, Ireland, after he refused to address a transitioning student as they rather than he on the basis of his devout Christian beliefs. I mean, think about it. How can you refer to a single individual as they anyway, which is grammatically plural? I mean, even on the most elementary syntactical grounds, it's stupid, wrong, inappropriate to refer to any single individual as they. Despite being ordered by the school to stay away, Burke continued to attend and was subsequently arrested and jailed in September. Burke argued that he was not a criminal and asked the court to free me for Christmas, citing his religious beliefs as justification for his refusal of the court order. I'm not sure about you folks, but I do not believe that society must conform to their psychosis so that we don't hurt the feelings of the unhinged. I also do not want to live in a society where it is a criminal matter if one disobeys compelled speech. Bottom line, when it comes to the lunatic fringe, there are more normal people on the planet than those lunatics who are telling us what to do and what to think. We can only take a stand to reverse this odious tide. Now, as though that were not bad enough, in Ireland, at least we here in America may not feel responsibility. But get this, in my opinion, the height of absurdity. Stanford University declares calling yourself American is offensive. I mean, give me a break. Academics in the United States need to be, academia in the United States needs to be torn down and built back up from the scrap heap that results. Nowhere is this more obvious than the latest incarnation of Stanford University's list of words they'd like to eliminate from the public discourse on campus. The document, published by the top-notch university in May, but revised on Monday and reviewed by the Wall Street Journal, is titled The Elimination of Harmful Language Initiative. Let me add, my best friend in high school, Richard Parker, and I were both in the Navy regular program. We both got Navy scholarships. I went to Princeton. He went to Stanford. We both chose the Marine Corps option. He served in Vietnam and did two tours, including deep reconnaissance behind enemy lines. He got a Bronze Star. I've always thought, having been born in Pasadena and grown up in California, that Stanford was a preeminent institution. I've even contemplated recommending, indeed, I've already recommended Stanford for my grandson, but I'm going to reverse course. This is despicable. This is the height of stupidity. And by the way, I've ceased contributing to Princeton and as an alumni, where I'd been very faithful with a modest contribution for some 50 years, when they abolished Woodrow Wilson's name from the School for International Relations on grounds of woke considerations. I mean, it's just ridiculous. The goal of the initiative, according to the memo, is to eliminate many forms of harmful language, including racist, violent, and biased language on the university's website and in its internal documents and code. One of the words that stands out to any rational person is American. Call yourself an American? Please don't, the Wall Street Journal writes. Better to say U.S. citizen, per the biased hunters. Yes, you slight the rest of the Americas. I mean, good God. Unbelievable. The Stanford Guide to Acceptable Words doesn't find the word American offensive simply based on the fact that there are other Americas, North, South, Central. No, it's a fact that people from the United States saying the term suggests that they think they're better than everybody else, which, as this is the greatest country on earth, anyway, go figure. Stanford adds context to the term American. This term often refers to people from the United States only, thereby insinuating that the U.S. is the most important country in the Americas, which, of course, is a fact. Rather than teaching students that the word American is offensive, Stanford should consider teaching them why, in fact, the United States of America is the most important country in the world. You guys, this list of words that Stanford doesn't want us to use anymore is truly insane. Let me see if I can pull it up enough that I can read it clearly. Apologies for this. Instead of stand up meeting, use quick meeting. Instead of inane, use insane, use surprising or wild. Instead of brave, use, wow, just silly. Let me see if I can find that whole list and come back to it, because what I'm reading here is difficult to read. As you might imagine, there were some rather strong responses to Stanford Guide to Acceptable Words listing American as offensive. Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, who was blacklisted from Twitter for his views during the pandemic, and who happens to be a professor at Stanford, was defiant. I remember how proud I was when I became a naturalized American citizen, he tweeted. I'm still proud to be an American, and I don't care that Stanford disapproves of my using the term. Unbelievable. Twitter chief, for now, Elon Musk, also chimed in. Stanford disapproves of saying you're proud to be an American? The free speech advocate responded, whoa. Unbelievable. Blaze contributor T.J. Moe broke it down in basic terms. If you are not proud to be an American, then leave. This isn't the country for you, Mo writes. Those who are running Stanford would do well to find a new home. Though, to be fair, Stanford is in California, which at this point can only be said to be American due to its accidental geography. I think that's right. Byron York tweeted, "New guide says using American can insinuate that the U.S. is the most important country in the Americas. This is so mental, I'm embarrassed for them. Pure lunacy." The Stanford guide, in acceptable words, also frowns on the term immigrant, which is heretofore known as person who has immigrated. Master is also unacceptable in its many forms, since, according to Stanford, historically, masters have enslaved people. I mean, you're talking about the woke agenda to an idiotic extreme degree. Just stunning, stunning stuff. And let me pull up that further list. Here we go. Well, it's still hard to read. Let's see. Instead of stand-up meeting, consider using quick meeting context, ableist language that trivializes the experience of people living with disability. Oh, my God. I mean, listen to their rationales. Instead of stand-up meeting, consider using quick meeting context, ableist language that trivializes the experience of people living with disabilities. What could be more absurd? Insane. Consider using instead, surprising or wild, ableist language that trivializes the experiences of people living with mental health conditions. My God, brave is a noun. Consider using none. Do not use. This term perpetuates the stereotype of the noble, courageous savage, equating the indigenous male as being less than a man. My God! Then that's brave with a capital B, as in referring to an Indian brave. American. Consider using instead U.S. citizen. This term often refers to people from the United States only, thereby insinuating that the U.S. is the most important country in the Americas, which is actually made up of 42 countries. But as others are noting, it's not only the most important country in the Americas, it's the most important country in the world. User. Consider using instead client. While often associated with one who uses software system services, it can also negatively be associated with those who suffer from substance abuse issues or those who exploit others for their own gain. Yeah, it's an ambiguous word. What's surprising about that? The word bank could refer to the side of a, you know, land beside a river. It could refer to a financial institution. This is just stupid. There is no common sense involved here. This is ideology run amok. Beating a dead horse. Consider using instead. Refusing to let something go. This expression normalizes violence against animals. Give me a break. Trigger warning. Consider using instead. Content note. The phrase can cause stress about what's to follow. Additionally, one can never know what may or may not trigger a particular person. What the hell? You guys. Instead, consider folks, people, everyone. Lumps a group of people using masculine language and or into gender binary groups which don't include everyone. My God. Walk in. Consider using instead drop in open office. Ableist language that trivializes the experience of people living with disabilities. This is insane. This is moronic. This is absolute colossal stupidity. I just cannot believe an institution that I have regarded as so significant, so good, such high quality of excellence. And I would even suggest recommending my own grandson go, not anymore. Believe me, this is ridiculous beyond belief. Stanford University? My God. Absolutely stunning stuff. All the more important, I think, that Elon Musk had championed freedom of speech. Here's another article related there, too. Two, actually. President Trump's restoring free speech platform is spot on 8 executive orders he'd enact to achieve it. Can you imagine a presidential candidate from 20 years ago needing to have a freedom of speech platform as part of their campaign? If that had happened, most of us would have thought, well, wait, don't we already have free speech? But as we have learned increasingly over the past decade, our rights are under an all-out assault from permanent Washington, also known as the swamp. President Donald Trump, who it seems always had his finger on the pulse in America, has released his Restoring Free Speech platform. Let's dive in and take a look. President Trump announced he'll be issuing an executive order to accomplish most of these objectives. Hopefully, they will be codified into law by Congress at some point as well, so some future Democrat can immediately overturn them. We'll go through the proposed executive order point by point. Trump plans to ban federal agencies from colluding to censor Americans. This is a necessary first step. Federal agencies were censoring conservatives and Trump supporters from the shadows. They didn't do it out in the open because they knew it was illegal. We don't know the extent of the FBI's involvement with Twitter yet, because Elon Musk hadn't released any of those files. But now, of course, as we know, he has. And the FBI's engagement with Twitter was massive. Agencies would be banned from labeling any information as mis- or disinformation. Misinformation and disinformation are BS terms anyway. Something is either true or it is a lie. And the only way free people can determine that sometimes is if we have access to all sides of an issue. It's fundamentally wrong for federal agencies to be labeling information in regard to political speech or COVID vaccine speech. Let me comment on this because it's not quite right. Information is simply meaningful data, okay? Meaningful data. It could be a string of zeros and ones, high and low voltage, if they're meaningful. That's in terms of computer code that you can be translated into one of the computer languages used to program and so forth. But it's not inherently meaningful to the machine. It's simply processing in accordance with programs to yield sentences, for example, where we know of a sentence, even a simple one, like it's snowing outside right now here in Madison, Wisconsin. We know a simple sentence like that is meaningful data. We know what it means. We know the situation if it were snowing outside. We know the situation if it were not snowing outside. And it's going to turn out to be the case that the sentence that's snowing in Madison right now is true, if and only if it's snowing outside in Madison now. That sounds trivial. It can be formalized more technically, where you put the sentence you're talking about in quotation marks. It could be a sentence in German that means the same thing. It could be a sentence in French or Swahili. But in a meta language, using English to talk about a sentence in German or French or Swahili, or to talk about a sentence in English, where you're using, as it were, a higher level of meta language to talk about a sentence in another language, it will turn out for all those sentences that have the same content that they're true, if and only if it's snowing outside in Madison now. And of course, the time specificity has to be exact. Obviously, We're talking about a transient property, something that is sometimes the case and other times not the case. Unlike, for example, mathematical propositions such as 2 plus 2 equals 4. 2 plus 2 equals 4 is true at all places, at all times, within any language framework in which mathematics is defined. Roughly speaking, where 2 means 2 strokes, 2 plus 2 equals 4 strokes. 4 strokes means 4. 2 plus 2 equals 4. That's universally true given the language framework. And remember, any claims about truth or falsity are all relative to a language framework. There are no sentences that are meaningful independent of a language framework. Normally, we presuppose a language framework because we are language users, most here in the U.S., English. My opinion, English ought to be the standard language for the United States. Anyone who comes to the United States as a migrant, for example, should learn English, that it's indispensable to have a common language in order to communicate with your fellow citizens and in order to cooperate with your fellow citizens and in order to achieve common goals with your fellow citizens, all of what are involved in constituting a community. So we'll return after this break.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Revolution Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Here's another example of a sentence that you don't have to experiment, measure, or observe to know to be true. If John is a bachelor, then John is unmarried. Or if John is a bachelor, then John is an adult. Or if John is a bachelor, then John is male. Why? Because the word bachelor is defined as an unmarried adult male. So those are claims like 2 plus 2 equals 4. You can know to be true without it conducting any observations, measurements, or experiments. They fall in a category that is known technically as sentences that are analytic. Their truth merely depends upon the language framework you've adopted. And by the way, it becomes significant when there are efforts to redefine words like woman or now recession. The government is going about to redefine words so they can make false claims appear to be true based upon slanted definitions. That's very bad. But it's politics. Claiming the terms misinformation and disinformation are BS is not right either. I was among the first to investigate these distinctions and publish about them. Now, what you need to bear in mind is, if you look at a language, and while we communicate in many ways other than language, language is our most common mode of communication. Sentences are true or false, depending upon, if they're non-analytic, whether they correspond to the way things are. Thus, the example, the sentence in English, French, German, Swahili, meaning it's snowing outside, will be true just in case it's snowing outside. Now, Misinformation is a term merely to distinguish between meaningful data and meaningful data that is true and meaningful data that is false. Misinformation can be defined as false but meaningful data. Many cases, we don't know whether a sentence is true or false, but it's meaningful data. Among the most controversial of our time, JFK was shot by Lee Harvey Oswald, the lone assassin. That's meaningful. We know what it means. A lot of the country for a long time believed it was true. Based on 30 years of research with the best experts to ever study the case, I can guarantee for you that it is false. Or the United States was attacked on 9/11 by 19 Islamic terrorists under the control of a guy off in Afghanistan. That sentence, of course, is going to be true just in case the United States was attacked by 19 Islamic terrorists under control of a guy off in Afghanistan, and otherwise it's false. Now, if you were just to submit those sentences to someone who is naive, oblivious of history of the facts of the matter, never undertook any investigation, for them they would be meaningful. They would be information. But they wouldn't know whether it were true or false. So by defining misinformation as information that happens to be false, we thereby assign it to a category of saying it does not correspond to reality. Or, in other words, it is not the case that Lee Harvey Oswald was the lone assassin of JFK. Or it is not the case that 19 Islamic terrorists attacked the United States on 9/11 under control of a guy in a cave in Afghanistan. And in fact, those of us who have conducted the research, no, that statement, too, is false. Now, knowing a statement is false, however, does not mean that you might not want to deploy it if you have the intention of misleading an audience. For example, the Warren Commission declared Lee Oswald the sole assassin of JFK. Basically, in a deliberate effort to mislead the American people, because Lyndon Johnson had told them this was a communist conspiracy, and if you inform the American people, it may lead to a nuclear war where 40 million people would die. This was a technique he used to manipulate the court into issuing a false conclusion. It wasn't unanimous among all the members. Richard Russell, for example, was a skeptic. Hale Boggs was a skeptic. Alan Dulles was leading everyone down the primrose path. John J. McCoy knew much better. He'd even been at the ratification meeting to decide to go forward with the assassination of JFK the night before at the home of Clint Murchison Sr. John Sherman Cooper, I'm not quite so sure, but I guarantee you that Gerald Ford was Edgar's man on the commission. He was keeping him informed of the direction they were going. It was he, Gerald Ford, who changed the description of the wound to the back from his uppermost back, which was already an exaggeration, given the wound was actually 5.5 inches below the collar, just to the right of the spinal column, to the base of the back of the neck, to make the magic bullet theory more plausible. It turns out it's not even anatomically possible for a bullet to enter where the gut Warren Commission claimed and to exit the throat, because cervical vertebrae intervened. David W. Mantic, MD, PhD, the leading expert on the medical evidence in the world. Found a patient with similar chest and neck dimensions and plotted the official trajectory on a CAT scan and discovered it's not even anatomically possible. In other words, what the Warren Commission gave us is bullshit. It's not only not factually accurate, it's not even anatomically possible. So what was going on? They were deliberately lying to the American people. Now, you can be naive about things. You can make mistakes. I remember in a bus in London, a Chinese woman asked me if the in the double-decker bus we were driving was, if this was Hyde Park. And I thought it was Hyde Park. And I said, yes, but I really was irresponsible because I didn't know for sure. She got off the bus, and as we were pulling away, I saw a big sign that said Green Park. But I wasn't lying. I was making a sentence, asserting a sentence that was false, saying it was Hyde Park when it was Green Park. She acted on my, when I was just as ignorant as she, but thought I knew the case when I did not. But I wasn't lying. I wasn't trying to deliberately mislead her. So here, this explanation is simplistic and wrong. Lies involve knowing the truth, knowing a sentence is false, but deliberately asserting it anyway with the intention to mislead the audience. That's what the Warren Commission did. That's what the 9/11 Commission did. 19 Islamic terrorists and a guy in Afghanistan had nothing to do with 9/11. They were patsies. Lee Oswald himself said, "I'm the patsy." The guy who's going to take the blame to mislead everyone else, and he was 100% correct. One of the benefits of my being restored to Twitter is to point these things out in the context where Tucker Carlson, responding to the Biden administration decision not to release all of the JFK records, even though it's the law, the JFK Records Act required they all be released by 2017, where even Trump was dissuaded by the CIA on grounds of national security, and now Biden again and Hunter raises the question with someone knowledgeable about their contents. Was the CIA involved in the assassination of JFK? To which the response was yes. And Bobby Jr. tweets, "This is the most courageous news story of the last 60 years. Finally getting around to acknowledging the role of the CIA, which gave me the opportunity to post several of my lengthy, detailed explanation, detailed reports based on my collaborative research over 50 years, 30 years actually, since 1992, as to what actually happened, what they're covering up. Now, just to say something false is not the same thing as to lie. This is a common blunder in ordinary speech and conversation. You ought not to be committing that blunder. Lies are deliberate assertions of information you know to be false with the intention to mislead. When I told her that was Hyde Park, I did not know what I was saying was false. I most certainly had no intention to mislead. I'm only hoping that she realized the difference and was able to meet her party. But it was an object lesson for me that if I do not actually know, I thought I knew, but I did not, I shouldn't be giving advice to anybody about something like that. I should have said, you know, I'm a stranger here too. I've been to London now 7 times. I regard it as my favorite city in the world, though I don't know if I'd feel the same today as I have in my past journeys there. But it's very important to understand the difference here. Disinformation then is false information and therefore misinformation that is being disseminated, deliberately asserted with the intent to mislead. We are surrounded by disinformation. The Democrat Party ought to relabel itself the Disinformation Party. Virtually everything we get from the Democrat Party these days is disinformation. It is false claims they know to be false are deliberately asserting with the intention of misleading the American people to manipulate us for political purposes. Now, what's wrong about declaring misinformation or disinformation is the parties making those declarations aren't qualified to determine whether the statements are true or false, and most certainly whether or not they're being deliberately disseminated. It's the blunder here is the elementary fallacy known as begging the question, taking for granted the issue at stake. We constantly hear Trump supporters are promoting misinformation or disinformation by claiming the election of 2020 was stolen. Well, the election of 2020 was stolen. And yet you cannot find a press report in the media that doesn't assert this is false information or this is misinformation by begging the question, by taking for granted, and typically even calling it false information is actually itself an act of disinformation because it's being done deliberately in full knowledge that, in fact, the claim is true. Just an aside about the study of language, there are three components to the study of language or of languages generally. Syntax, roughly speaking, the grammar of the language, how the words are put together to construct sentences that are what are known technically as well-formed sentences. These would be grammatical sentences in, for example, the English language. Even the structure of, you know, grammar, even the syntax of English is being regularly violated nowadays as there's a bending to common usage on the grounds of equity of acknowledging ill-formed sentences as though they were properly formed sentences in the English language. I mean, we're seeing the Stanford stuff is very much along that line, but it's looking at the second aspect of language, the semantics, the meanings of the words involved. Not every sentence in a language, by the way, is true or false. That's distinctive of what are technically known as statements. We have expressions of emotion, exclamations, wow, damn, golly. Those are neither true nor false. Those are expressing attitudes or emotions. Then there are questions. What time is it? Is it snowing outside? Did 19 Islamic terrorists attack the United States on 9/11? Those are questions. They're well-formed grammatically, but they're neither true nor false. They're asking for answers where the answers will be true or false. So those are the interrogatories. It's the declarative sentences, the ones that assert something to be true or false that are candidates for being disinformation or misinformation. And there are imperatives as a fourth category. Stop. Shut up. Don't do that. Those imperatives are offering directions or directives to individuals to modify their behavior one way or another. So you have the imperatives, the declaratives, the exclamatory, and the interrogatory, four different kinds of sentences, among which only one is true or false. Though it is the case that some interrogatories have presuppositions that take for granted as though they were true, issues that may be in dispute. Prosecutor might ask a witness on the stand, Mr. Banz, what made you think you could get away with murdering your wife? Which entails a presupposition that Mr. Banz murdered his wife. That may well be the issue. Maybe he's on trial for murdering his wife. That's called a leading or complex question. Interestingly, in courts of law, if a party is assigned the status of being a hostile witness, then the interrogator is allowed to use leading or complex questions. This is in an effort to ferret out the truth. But in normal contexts, leading or question begging questions are generally inappropriate. But they can occur. And by God, begging the question of what politicians, in particular the Democrat Party, does all the time. Anytime you see one of these claims that something is disinformation or misinformation, think about what I'm explaining here. Trump's agenda? The president plans to fire every federal bureaucrat who is involved in censoring American speech in any way, shape, or form. I couldn't agree more. Fire them and cut off their pensions if they have them. Using a government paper-pushing office and a six-figure salary to censor truck drivers you disagree with is probably worth at least a January 6th style stint in jail, but firing them is still a pretty good punishment. When it comes to January 6th, we have the whole January 6th committee. They're issuing recommendations of charges being brought against Trump for insurrection. It's all political theater. The claims they're making are false. They are deliberately pushing false information. In other words, the whole January 6th committee was set up as an operation in disinformation for a bunch of Democrats and Trump-hating Republicans, Liz Cheney and this guy Kinzinger from Illinois. Mediocrities both. Liz Cheney lost by a whopping margin in Wisconsin. To know her is to hate her. Her father was one of the most malevolent figures ever to hold high office in the United States. He was, based upon my collaborative research, the executive director of 9/11 from a bunker underneath the White House. I'm just telling you, we're being confronted with massive disinformation operations. Everything they're peddling is false. They've edited evidence such as Trump's speech at the Ellipse, where he told his followers to be peaceful in their protests. They cut it out. When he was restored on Twitter after having been banned, his last two tweets were telling his followers to honor the men in blue, that we're the party of law and order, obey the law, be peaceful. And for that, they banned him for inciting violence. He was doing precisely the opposite. Twitter knew that. They banned him as an action that really implied false information and was thereby done deliberately, an act of disinformation. January 6th, political bullshit from beginning to end. But because you have a Department of Justice that's totally politicized, because you have an FBI that's totally politicized, you can count on them coming down with indictments of Trump. They fear this guy like no other politician in the history of America has been feared. Trump has made a connection with the American people who believe in Donald Trump. Remember, the election in 2016 was rigged for Hillary. It was rigged for Hillary. But the rural vote, which they were unable to constrain, came out in mass for Donald Trump and made him our president of the United States. Thank God. He did many, many good things for America. It wasn't perfect, but he was damn good. He got us in no wars, settled things down in the Middle East, didn't get us involved in Ukraine, made us energy independent, took on the fake news. I can't think. If that were all he had done was to take on and expose the fake news media, we would owe him our gratitude, our eternal gratitude. Made the economy robust, shut down the border to a trickle. Lowest earning wage earners were seeing their wages rise at the highest rate. Stunning stuff. Trump wants to have the DOJ investigate and prosecute all parties involved in online censorship. Who would do that at DOJ? The FBI was literally participating in the censorship and having weekly meetings at the tech companies, telling them who to censor about Joe and Hunter Biden. He wants to revise Section 230. There are pros and cons to that. Seems like there should be a more specific and effective way to open tech companies to liability than that, but it's better than what we have in place right now. Unfortunately, it'll take an act of Congress, which won't happen anytime soon. He wants to cut off federal funding to all nonprofits and colleges that have had a hand in censoring America. I think today that ought to include Stanford, Princeton. Some of our most distinguished universities are falling flat when it comes to standing up for freedom of speech and integrity. I mean, They have succumbed to the propaganda of the left. It is embarrassing. It is contemptible. We all ought to react with revulsion. Stanford, you can't call yourself an American? I think most of us totally agree. Most of us don't think of these things in the elevated terms the founding fathers used, but silencing someone, preventing them from speaking through the power of government, is akin to depriving someone of their life. That's how important free speech is. So if Harvard or Stanford or some nonprofit loses its federal funding, that's a fitting and appropriate step. I agree. He wants to enact criminal penalties for any federal employee who partners with a private entity like Twitter to violate constitutional rights. Yes. But now, of course, Twitter is actually becoming a bastion for freedom of speech, which I applaud. He's also imposing a 7-year cooling-off period before a person who worked at an intel agency or national security can take a job at a big company. Completely appropriate. Completely appropriate. Twitter was crawling with feds, as we now know. So are many state-level Secretary of State offices that just ran the 2022 midterms. This is a good proposal, but probably doesn't go far enough. It's been well over a decade. I'll be back right after this break.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out "And Nobody Died in Boston Either." Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, the continued Trump's agenda for restoring freedom of speech. I left off observing there's so many state-level Secretary of State offices that just ran the 2022 midterms and participated in their theft. This is a good proposal, but probably doesn't go far enough. It's been well over a decade since I, the author, left my position at ABC News, and I still have friends and contacts in the industry everywhere from Fox to the Weather Channel. It's the same for people working in federal agencies like the CIA and the FBI. This should be longer than 7 years. Finally, President Trump is proposing a digital Bill of Rights. I like the sound of it, but we don't have details on that. It's a good platform, although it's kind of hard to process the fact that we're talking about free speech as a political issue in America. Next, I want to see President Trump's proposal for amnesty for every January 6th political prisoner who's been in Joe Biden's gulag for almost 2 years now. Agreed. Meanwhile, and this is equally fascinating, the American left bows out of free speech fight. This is by Patrick Maines for Real Clear Politics, which is among the most reliable sources we have for statistical data about political opinions in the United States, where they do an average of different polls. So you get an average of the polling across the state, which tends to be more reliable than the individual polls themselves. So it's like a poll of polls. Of the several unwelcome revelations in the past 6 years, the most politically significant is that liberalism as a political philosophy is dead. And here, of course, he's talking about classic liberalism, which is absolutely rooted in freedom of speech, freedom of opinion. Though I may disagree with every word you say, I will defend to the death your right to say it. Classic liberalism. What we have today is neoliberalism, a really corrupted version. Oh, there may still be some individuals who identify with it, but for the most part, they are old, retired, or cowed into silence by the howling mobs of progressives, the woke, and the identitarian left. And how do we know this? We know it by the collapse of colleges and universities and places of open debate and inquiry. And we know it by the abandonment of any kind of honest and principled journalism by the vast majority of the legacy in social media. For decades, these two institutions, the press and the academy, have been the white-hot center of American liberalism. And their metamorphosis into woke and progressive fortresses signals the end of it. Stanford and Princeton being perfect illustrations. Deplorable. How else to explain the spectacle of acceptance, if not the promotion, of censoring, of shadow banning, and of canceling, or the spread of CRT concepts, critical race theory concepts, basically that whites are inherently racist, that race is your single most important defining quality, precisely the opposite of the views espoused by great moral leaders like Martin Luther King Jr., who wanted men to be judged not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. Where has that gone? Or the hostility shown toward Elon Musk's stated goal of reinstating free speech on Twitter. Or the thuggish and uniform media lies regarding stories like the origin of COVID-19 and the authenticity of Hunter Biden's laptop. You don't have to admire or share the philosophy to know that liberalism is or was popularly likened to virtues like tolerance and broad-mindedness. But none of the examples above reflect any of those qualities, just the opposite. In the summer of 2020, Harper's Magazine published an open letter signed by 150 or so, most of whom would then have been regarded as liberals. In it, the signers made clear their dismay over the attacks on freedom of speech. Quoting from the statement they endorsed, "The free exchange of information and ideas, the lifeblood of a liberal society, is daily becoming more constricted. While we have come to expect this on the radical left, censoriousness is already spreading more widely in our culture. An intolerance of opposing views, a vogue for public shaming and ostracism, and the tendency to dissolve complex policy issues in a blinding moral certainty. More troubling still, institutional leaders, in a spirit of panic damage control, are delivering hasty and disproportionate punishments instead of considered reforms. Editors are fired for running controversial pieces. Books are withdrawn for alleged inauthenticity. Journalists are barred from writing on certain topics. Professors are investigated for quoting works of literature in class. And the heads of organizations are ousted for what are sometimes just clumsy mistakes. As shocking and despicable as the attacks on free speech are, there have been hints that the media would not be offended and might even be supportive of them. During the many years that I was the head of a Washington think tank, supported financially by media and communication companies, I had many meetings with members of the media, from broadcasting and cable to print and digital organizations. And it pains me to say that with few exceptions, they evince a resolute, not to say self-righteous, interest in freedom of the press, but little or no interest in the free speech of people generally. When pressed to do so, they might provide limited support for events like Free Speech Week, but the point survives. In overwhelming numbers, media executives, communication lawyers, journalists, media trade associations appreciate the First Amendment for its protection of freedom of the press, not for its protection of free speech for everyone. Disturbing to the max. And the other illustrations I've given you from Ireland and Stanford reinforce that we are up against it, that the situation we're encountering here is beyond belief. Here, I think, then, is a very telling example of the importance. This is a piece by Joaquin Hagopian published on my blog at jameshfetzer.org. New York Times contradiction exposed amidst epic war for truth over lies. Joaquin Hagopian. barely 2 months into Russia's special military operation in Ukraine. On May 4th, 2022, the New York Times ran an explosive article with a bombshell heading, U.S. intelligence is helping Ukraine kill Russian generals, officials say. Its opening sentence emphatically states, the United States has provided intelligence about Russian units that has allowed Ukrainians to target and kill many of the Russian generals who have died in action in the Ukraine war, according to senior American officials. In that same May article, Ukrainian officials, with a dubious reputation for lacking credibility, claimed that Ukraine in just 2 months had successfully killed at least a dozen Russian generals on its battlefield through direct U.S. intelligence assistance. Let me add as an aside, just to tell you how extraordinary it would be for all these generals to die in such a brief period of time. During the entirety of the Vietnam War, only one general officer died. By sheer coincidence, I knew him. He had been my commanding general when I was stationed at the U.S. Marine Corps Recruit Depot in San Diego. When I was there, serving as a series commander from 64 to 66, when I had 15 DIs and 300 recruits under my command going through the training cycle the first year, and then the second was moved up to regimental headquarters to revise the training curriculum. So instead of training 8,000 Marines in 11 weeks, we could train 11,000 Marines in 8 weeks to be sent to Vietnam. I would see the whole process operating with efficiency before I resigned my commission as a captain to enter graduate school to earn a PhD in the history and the philosophy of science. And in retrospect, of course, I have mixed feelings because I feel the Vietnam War was a colossal blunder that we should never have been involved. One of my fellow series commanders, Bob Stark, actually served as the aide-de-camp to General Bruno Hochmuth. The general was shot down in a helicopter and became the only general officer to die during the entirety of the Vietnam conflict. My friend Bob Stark would normally have been in the helicopter with him, but the day before he was stung by a scorpion, which saved his life. Remarkable. So, to have dozens of generals killed in Ukraine in this brief period of time is, from a military point of view, based on past experience, extraordinary. Extraordinary. And that the U.S. is doing this, contemptible. Just days ago on Saturday, December 17th, Joaquin continues, 7 months later, that same New York Times alleges that the U.S. sought to dissuade the Kiev government from killing the head of the Russian general staff, Army General Valery Gerasimov, alleging the U.S. purposely withheld the Russian high command's location while on a trip to Ukraine. So which is it? The first Mockingbird Time brags that Washington is helping Ukraine search and destroy Russia's top brass leadership for the purpose of assassination. But now, last Saturday, the Times is walking it all back, reporting the bogus contention that U.S. intel made every effort to spare the life of the crucially important top Russian general who is currently tearing apart Ukraine's military, energy, and power infrastructure. This latest contradictory claim fails completely to logically stack up and make any sense. As it turns out, despite a decision that allegedly went straight to the White House to withhold the intel from Ukraine in late April, those pesky Zelenskyites learned of General Gerasimov's trip to Ukraine anyway, and despite U.S. officials allegedly placing pressure on Kiev not to go through with trying to target the general for extermination, Ukraine defiantly launched a strike anyway that did supposedly kill lots of Russian soldiers in the general's vicinity, but not the general himself. Perhaps this latest December article is intended to emphasize how the current U.S. regime has attempted and gone out of its way to avert further deepening clashes with Russia that could well lead to potential world war. If that's the case, this transparently fake veil designed to ostensibly demonstrate how Washington never truly wants to go head-to-head against Russia in a potential nuclear world war is a bold-faced lie. After years of doing the exact opposite, aggressively going after Russia, the U.S. damage has already been done and can't be cleaned up by the New York Times a week before Christmas Eve. It's obviously too little, too late. The neocon, D.C. neocon warmongers' true intentions have all been clearly demonstrated by its insane threatening U.S. policy against Russia, over-the-top signaling with clear intent to seize every opportunity to aggressively ratchet up tensions over the last many decades since the end of World War II in 1945. And it's these actions consistently that speak far louder than any feigned hypocritical pretense of a last-minute desire to avert World War III, depicted in this December 17th article. This appears to be just more propagandized hubris from the U.S. government, getting its ass kicked in Ukraine, responding in typical collusion with its favorite propagandist rag, the New York Times. As an aside, I add, believe it or not, the New York Times is our nation's newspaper of record, meaning what appears in the New York Times is supposed to constitute the official history of the United States. How repulsive is that? Why, by their actions, are the D.C. neocons consistently bent on trying to instigate a nuclear world war, seemingly caught here in this piece completely reversing policy, using the same go-to propaganda tool to contradict its story 7 months earlier? The recent Times piece states that back in late April, a few days ahead of its May 4th report, openly admitting, if not boasting, that U.S. intel was actively assisting Kiev in killing top Russian generals, but now purports that in late April, during the General Gerasimov's planned visit to the Ukraine front line, U.S. intel officials chose to withhold the general's whereabouts from Kiev authorities, ostensibly fearing if Ukraine killed the general, it might risk igniting a larger war with Russia. Why would American intel, in effect, aid and abet the methodical killing of a dozen Russian generals, even leak on May 4th such incriminating information to the New York Times, seemingly touting that a slew of Russian generals were dying because of the mighty USA's high-tech intervention, only to have the same Times 7 months later squarely state the complete opposite scenario, that intel opted to try and spare General Gerasimov's life, so concerned it could spark a larger war with Russia? Yet Moscow already obviously knows this from the main New York Times article, and that, in fact, for numerous years, long prior to that main propaganda piece, U.S. intelligence has been actively deployed on the ground in Ukraine, forever working at cross purposes against the interests of Russian national security. So Saturday's latest contradictory message makes little sense, taken in the context of the May 4th article. But the thrust of this latest modus entry from the Times is yet another run-of-the-mill hit piece on Putin, follies in Ukraine, and bold-faced lies that plainly expose the neocon follies in Ukraine. For decades, Washington puppets have consistently done everything in their collective Western power to hostily provoke Russia into a wider armed conflict, today willfully raising such never-before-seen unprecedented stakes, specifically to intentionally incite the nuclear World War III endgame, using the last Ukrainian man as cannon fodder to willfully make it happen. U.S. policy has constantly and historically always been antagonistic and provocative toward escalating deeper conflicts and tensions with Russia, demonizing Vladimir Putin as the next Adolf Hitler for two straight decades. Now, after it was the Rothschild Kissinger Schwab crew that covertly groomed and elevated the young KGB career operative to becoming Russia's new leader at the turn of the century, even prior to their first post-Soviet pick, the feeble alcoholic Boris Yeltsin's demise. This fact comes directly from the horse's mouth of globalist Illuminati guru Henry Kissinger's right-hand man, Dr. Steve Pachinik, who bragged about selecting Putin while puppet Yeltsin was still alive, even prior to Premier Gorbachev bringing down the Soviet Union's final Iron Curtain. Western oligarchic sharks were swarming to feast as predatory globalist vultures, raping Russia's vast natural resources, busily grooming Putin as Yeltsin's successor. In January 2021, Putin made an online speech before the Davos crowd, thanking Klaus Schwab for introducing him, at which point Putin claims to be old friends with Schwab since 1992, the same year Klaus began grooming most of today's young leaders, subversively handpicked into power as G20 prime ministers and presidents, key gatekeeping ministers and cabinet members, all globalist puppets, during the bloodline bidding, pleasing their masters, building back better for Klaus and King Charles' great reset, so we die of mass starvation and malnutrition, eating Bill Gates' bugs. Incidentally, the half-year shy of centenarian status, Henry Kissinger just penned an editorial for The Spectator, dated December 17th, appealing to all parties for a peaceful negotiation process to begin writing. The goal of a peace process would be twofold: to confirm the freedom of Ukraine and to redefine a new international structure, especially for Central and Eastern Europe. Eventually, Russia should find a place in such an order. Such advice may appear pie in the sky, though urging peace can't be criticized as a bad thing. The old war criminal codger's words may more aptly be avoidance of the fall of his cabal that he toiled decades to build back better, and his cabal's subsequent public exposure outing all the Luciferian crimes committed by Kissinger, Rothschild, really Red Shield, Schwab, and their globalist cronies behind today's genocide. Since the end of the Soviet Empire Cold War in the early 1990s, as sole global superpowers, the entire U.S. foreign policy has always been to fanatically encode its controlled opposition enemy, Russia, with hostile neighbors that were former Soviet republics, aggressively recruited into NATO, installing U.S. nukes on Russia's doorstep, pointing directly at Moscow. After all, it was a Red Shield's central banking cartel that spawned their third cousin, Karl Marx's Communist Manifesto, and Russia's Bolshevik Revolution in 1917 to get the controlled opposition bandwagon rolling. Per a prank conversation earlier this year, when intellectually challenged Bush Jr. was duped into believing he was talking to Ukraine's President Zelensky, Jr. gave away all his family's neocon secrets. The U.S. highly aggressive three-decade-long fixation, never honoring Washington's famous broken promise under Daddy Bush's watch, to advance NATO not one inch eastward as a precondition of Soviet Union dissolution from the Russian Federation get-go, never respecting Moscow's national security, nor Russia as the world's longest geographical border, nor its fundamental right to its national sovereignty. America's exceptionalism stokes its appalling regime change fixation as a gross violation of international law, giving rise to the U.S. illegal Ukraine coup in 2014, overthrowing Ukraine's democratically elected pro-Russian president, and the subsequent U.S. plan ever since to make its neo-Nazi Kiev regime another NATO member, like Poland and Romania, implanting U.S. nuclear warheads aimed at every major Russian city. Less than 3 weeks ago, U.S. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg is still promising war-torn Ukraine will one day become a member of NATO, the world's largest security alliance. Actions speak louder than words.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes. That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building. Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11, available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Continuing with Joaquin Hagopian's assessment of the situation, and I'm telling you, there's no one more astute on planet Earth at doing this. It's my honor to be publishing his articles on my blog. Using Germany and France to deceitfully, maliciously broker the 2014-15 Minsk Agreement that Angela Merkel just admitted was never intended to be honored by Ukraine or the West, but simply to inflame war against Moscow while biding enough time to build up Kiev's military strength to wage genocidal war against ethnic Russians living in Donbass. The two eastern breakaway provinces that voted in 2014 to be independent from Kiev. The Nazi Azov Battalion under Kiev orders with U.S. NATO's green-lit support proceeded to kill 14,000 ethnic Russian civilians living in the Donbass region even before Putin's Ukraine incursion. The neo-Nazi Azov Battalion has repeatedly opened fire on its own citizens, be they Ukrainians fleeing to Russia, massacring residents of fellow Ukrainians that continues to this very day. In July, they even fired on its own Azov POWs, killing 53 at a detention center in order to desperately silence them from giving war crime testimony. The U.S., NATO, and the West have been criminally complicit as soft-souled operatives deployed inside Ukraine, delivering support for Kiev's horrific war crime atrocities. The U.S. has actively utilized CIA, NATO, MI6, and the likes of Blackwater war criminal mercenary Eric Prince to train 150,000 Russian-hating Nazis in Ukraine by early February 2022, all lined up and set to launch a scheduled Donbass invasion in March of 2022. At the Donetsk People's Republic and Luhansk People's Republic emergency request, Putin simply beat the conniving, warmongering, backstabbing West to the punch, launching his special military operation on February 24th, 2022. To justifiably denazify and demilitarize Ukraine. Moreover, Ukraine government has been caught repeatedly running exposed false flags, blaming Russian soldiers for hundreds of Ukrainian civilians executed in the Kiev suburb of Bucha in early March, the hospital maternity ward bombed out by Ukrainian military shelling, the fake Russian tactical nukes, the November missile killing two Polish civilians, all falsely blamed on Russia. From the February start, the constant false flag deception is aimed to manipulate NATO nations to join Kiev's fight against the invading Russian bear. Both U.S. and U.K. forces are covertly on the ground in Ukraine, despite the Biden lie, not to mention thousands of foreign mercenaries fighting for Kiev. A mid-June Russian Foreign Ministry report stated 7,000 combatant guns for hire are serving in Ukraine. Since 2005, U.S. puppets like Manchurian traitor from within Barack Obama, as a junior Illinois senator, ensured that Ukraine would become the spawning ground for U.S. Department-funded labs to genetically develop bioweapons for potential genocidal development targeting ethnic Russians. No doubt Putin's Ukraine intervention shutting down dozens of biolabs, in effect, has saved millions of lives. After an overreaching genocidal conspiracy of the now ever-exposed COVID-19 plague pandemic and deadly non-vaccine mandates intended to kill off the vast majority of the global population has ultimately failed, so the murderous planetary overlords have since rolled out their next set of weapons of mass destruction as their plans B through Z. By late 2021, Wag the Dog misdirection massively shifted global focus away from the unfolding vaccine die-off directly to the relentless crime cabal-created conflict in Ukraine, accompanied by the propaganda blitzkrieg in the West of nonstop mainstream lies for over a year now. Painting Jewish actor turned Ukrainian president Volodymyr Zelensky as a modern-day Jewish King David versus evil giant Goliath being the big bad Russian bear. Z-Man is standing up against all odds in valiant heroic defense, fighting for fellow Western democracies against the invading madman villain Vlad the Bad Putin. Western media's frame of reference typically calling it an unprovoked invasion exemplifies the inversion of truth. Thuggish Ukrainian oligarch, crook, Ihor Kolomolisky, who owned Ukraine's largest bank, also owns the actor he catapulted to puppet presidency in 2019. Meanwhile, the cross-dressing, off-accused, coke-sniffing, very bad actor in the army green T-shirt has done nothing for democracy in Ukraine. As a Khazarian mafia poster boy for fascist dictatorship, Zelensky has shut down all opposition political parties, criminal courts, combating neo-Nazism and corruption, nationalized the media, heads a political assassination squad, and repeatedly kills his own citizens in false flags, blaming Russians. This little pompous, overly demanding, megalomaniac gnome, voted Time Person of the Year, has been guilt-tripping every single Western nation on the planet to foolishly send all its weapons, stockpile, and money straight into his corrupt coffers to get lost in the booming black market. Subsidized and supported by the international crime cartel, Zelensky is owned, operated, and controlled by satanic Khazarian bloodlines. Moreover, in April of 2022, Zelensky said he envisions post-war Ukraine to look like a big Israel, while Israel's secret plan is for Ukraine to become a second Israel. Putin's intervention poses at least a temporary obstacle, with Ukraine's tens of thousands of Ashkenazi Jews comprising one of the world's largest Jewish communities, and at least 90% of Israel's own citizens, Ashkenazi Jews. Their common roots are the ancient land of Khazar, now Ukraine. Puppet Zelensky's master, Kolomolisky, voiced his ultimate goal to build in Ukraine a new promised land. But his biggest obstacle, those ethnic Russians in the Donbass, and now Putin, is the greatest threat thwarting the anti-Russian oligarch and puppet Zelensky's plan for a new Zion in Ukraine. As an avowed anti-globalist and harsh critic of Western decadence, and hopefully not merely controlled opposition, Putin possesses the power to expose the devil's playground that is Ukraine, including the Biden crime family pedo compound and its underground trafficking tunnels right near the port of war-torn Mariupol. The Biden shady kickback links to Ukraine's largest NLG Burisma and Metabiota's biolabs in Ukraine. As the East-West hub for organized crimes laundered trillions from trafficked arms, organs, drugs, and child sex slaves, all being interdicted and cut off by Russia's special military operation. The deep state crime cabal's bread and butter in Ukraine is drying up and having put all its eggs in one Ukrainian war basket. It cannot survive full public exposure that Russia largely holds the key. The timed global economy collapse, driven by hyperinflation, combined with continued kill-shot die-off, rampant global supply chain shutdown, causing unprecedented food, fuel, and part shortages, resulting in famine, mass starvation, homelessness, freezing to death, and billions likely perishing. Humanity's genocidal killers cannot survive the wrath that's coming. The citizens of the world are now finally waking up to this 11th hour countdown and fast-reaching critical mass, rising up in global revolt against the demonic will of the powerful elite to kill and control. That unholy Save Ukraine debacle is a complete hoax, every bit as diabolically false as the climate change green agenda deception and the COVID pandemic safe and effective vaccine, the deadliest hoax of them all. These multi-genocidal weapons of mass destruction being hurled at us all at once are aimed to depopulate our planet by at least 90%, perpetrated literally by demons growing more desperate each passing week. Suicidal economic sanctions against Russia has created the long-planned energy crisis that is rapidly developing, delivering Western civilization's downfall. The ruling elite bloodlines that control the central banking cartel, led by Redshield, the big pharma global healthcare industry, led by the Rockefellers, and black nobility bloodlines, led by English royal family, are all losing power with a failed Great Reset. These notorious bloodlines engage in satanic death cults and cannibalistic occult secret society rituals and often get their addictive adrenochrome high from their lust for child blood sacrifice and child sodomy. Just ask King Charles III, whose ancestral idol is none other than Chucky's Transylvania Vlad the Bad Impaler, who inspired blood-sucking Dracula, or Prince Charles' best friend, UK history's biggest satanic pedophile, Jimmy Savile, or Charles' Princess Diana, his murdered first wife, who from her grave might tell you about the bloody royal skeletons in their closet. For centuries, these and other lesser-known bloodline families have retained control over our planet through divide and conquer deception, and increasingly deploying modus operandi, their problem-reaction-solution dialectic toward absolve one absolute one-world governance tyranny. Today, the bloodlines are the controlling shareholders of the world's two largest investment firms, BlackRock and Vanguard, and they still wield near immense power over the planet, owning virtually all of the Fortune 500 companies in all the public and private sector industries, all of the mass media outlets that include the mainstream corporate media, Hollywood and the big tech giants, the entire military security industrial complex, and of course, through bribery and kickback, primarily pedophilia, all the top governments around the globe, including entrapped, compromised, gatekeeping, VIP puppets, atop all stratified levels of the Earth's demonically driven monolithic power structure. They are humanity's genocidal enemy, killing thousands of us every single day in accordance with their irrefutable depopulation agenda. And so, the planetary controllers have realized so much of their dark side practices have been exposed to a growing public, especially the unthinkable, egregious crimes against children and humanity. More than at any other previous time throughout all of recorded history. There, new Babylonian satanic deities worshipped by the Khazarian mafia elites for millennia are being resoundingly rejected by the global masses. Despite today's nonstop mass media decadence and the crime cabal government's imposed insanities, the sinister globalist agenda is to socially engineer wicked wokeism into the moral fabric of an homogenized globalist-controlled society, to diabolically impose a mass mind-controlled anything-goes moral relativism, willfully designed to undermine humans' moral compass to know right from wrong. Incessant effort to thoroughly brainwash the global masses to ultimately accept normalized pedophilia and embrace the LGBTQ agenda with its transgender drag story hour at the White House and every woke school in America through subversive, systematic mind control brainwash, investing virtually all Western culture and spreading globally throughout the public education system and the mass media, social engineering propaganda. As the Luciferians' ungodly dark truth gets further exposed during their perfect storm of convergent genocidal crises, the controllers guiltily responsible for so much human suffering, death, and destruction are now being fully exposed and held accountable for all their depraved sins they've been parasitically perpetrating on this earth with complete impunity for far too long. As this momentous year, 2022, winds down, Nuremberg 2.0 awaits them all in coming months and years as we resolutely right their countless wrongs and injustices, empowered by our Creator's divine guidance, strength, and wisdom. Sooner than later, we shall overcome. Well, obviously, I hope he's got that right, that we are actually rising against. I believe there are more uprising, more protests in Europe than we find here in the United States. I fear that the influence of the mass media remains so profound among Americans, who are now being even told they can't call themselves Americans because it's a slight against other nations in the Americas, which is about as ridiculous as it gets. But we're promoting critical race theory, transsexualism, normalizing sex with children is indeed going on in abundance in our public schools, leading parents to rise up against it and assert their protests where they're being put down. Virginia was a stellar example, where parents protested against Terry McAuliffe declaring parents have no role in their children's education, which was indefensible and insulting. But where the ordinary standards of morality require respect for all populations, and the very idea of having the initiation or promotion of surgical changes, when these, we're talking about children who not only have no idea of what it means to be a man or a woman, and where they want to redefine what it means to be a woman to qualify as a man who declares himself to be a woman, it's grotesque. And it reminds me of the observation of Voltaire that those who can make us believe absurdities can make us commit atrocities. I believe that's taking place here and now in the United States today. But a terrible problem confronting us is the evil ones control the voting apparatus that enables us to reform our government periodically, which may have been at the very heart of the genius of the founding fathers when they created the Constitution. We have three branches of government, a legislative passing the laws, a judiciary interpreting the laws, and an executive enforcing the laws, where the members of Congress were subject to replacement by periodic elections in the House of Representatives. Every 2 years, every member of the House has to stand for re-election, which is the simplest and most direct way the public can affirm whether they agree or disagree with the policies that are being advanced by their representatives in Congress. And where, with regard to the Senate, one-third of the Senate is up for re-election every 2 years. And where it appears, had we had anything resembling an honest election here in the midterm, now just passed, the Republicans would have picked up 4 or 5 seats in the Senate and a minimum of 57 seats in the House, where James Carville acknowledged that they had saved 57 seats, meaning they had stolen 57 seats they ought to have lost, blaming it on Donald Trump, which was as ridiculous as it gets. Trump still has a profound, powerful standing with the American people. And when we know before the election how many major groups on which the Democrats depend to win honest elections were defecting, making it impossible for that to be the case. So they had to cheat. They had to lie. They had to steal. When you have Hispanics moving to the right, when you have Catholics moving to the right, when you have white suburban women moving to the right, where white suburban women make up 20% of the electorate, when they were declaring they preferred Donald Trump to Joe Biden, the outcome of this election was as ridiculous as it gets. And where after voting polling showed all those predictions and anticipations were confirmed by the reports of the actual voters who were polled after they had voted in such a way there should have been 4 or 5 new Republican senators and 57 new Republican seats. Just stunning, grotesque. And we have Kerry Lake fighting the good fight. To my mind, Kerry Lake is America's Joan of Arc. She is doing the right thing. And the question becomes, are our courts of law sufficiently dedicated to the rule of law that they're going to act remotely fairly on these issues, which are so controversial and partisan because the Democrats have rigged the election so extensively, and where if you read even a summary of Kerry Lake's case in Maricopa County, you would recognize she has all the proof in the world, and where a judge has ruled now that she may go to court, they may proceed on 2 of the issues, which had to do with the printers and the long lines and waiting, where the printers didn't have enough ink to print ballots that could be read, which is another way of discounting them, so the machine can't read them. So they go into the arbitration category, which are then decided by persons with subjective political preferences who can rule them any way they want, make them count for Biden, even if they were clearly meant for, or for in this case, for Hobbs, even if they were clearly meant for Lake. Only 17% of those who voted on election day were Democrats, and yet the Democrats got over 50% of the vote. And Mitchell reminds me about the census distribution scandal. They are manipulating the situation every possible way. They're using this voter registration scheme called ERIC, E-R-I-C, and updating constantly to preserve on the rolls persons, individuals who are deceased, who have left the state, who have changed their residence. They're sending out vast numbers of ballots deliberately to the wrong zip code, so they'll return as legitimate ballots and then can be cast, and you can conceal the deception by returning them electronically to the proper zip code. These are clever bastards, but they are bastards nevertheless. The Democratic Party has become a party of bastards and traitors to the United States. Don't let that lesson be lost on you. Thanks.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven. Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence